Welcome to another episode of Racer's Mindset. I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line, my co-host and a champion in his own right, Andrew Hobson. Andrew, how's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad, Brad. I come off a big weekend of racing, motorcycles, bicycles. Been a great week. Great race on Saturday. I'd like to break that down with you one day and see how you think of that. But
No, we're going to get to the bottom of that later on today, more than likely. When someone goes from 40th to first, we got to talk about it. But that's not what's at hand right now. This is an episode of Racer's Mindset. These are episodes where we help each other build, we help our listeners build themselves, and we shed light on people who are helping those around them and developing an amazing community. And when you're talking about that, I think you can't have that conversation without the hillbilly the factory. And that is none other than Cameron Przinski. Cameron, how's it going?
Good, gentlemen. Having a good morning here. Living life.
The 65 in your program, likely number one in your heart, especially if you race that Works series. Like I said, off air, not a series that I've spent a lot of time covering over the years. It's West Coast. It's often, I wouldn't say the woods because you guys don't really have the woods, but, it's off road and it's about as gnarly as it comes. And, give me a little bit of the, let's spin the clocks back, go in the time machine and tell me about how you got into moto, how you got into the Work series, and then, how you sort of stumbled across the fact that within the off-road community, although there's a ton of skill, there's a ton of racing and progression that goes on, sometimes it can be a little bit aimless. And sometimes if you inject a little bit of structure into that, you might be able to accelerate the whole program.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, got same story that you hear from a lot of racers. Got on a PW50 3-4 years old.
Amen.
Dad took you to the races, type of a thing. And that was the 90s, obviously. And my parents didn't know a ton about racing. We have property out here in Southern California, and I would just kind of ride in a dirt field, one end of the driveway and back. And I was convinced. I'm like, well, if I do this a lot, Jeremy McGrath's going to show up with the hauler and invite me to be on his team for a Chaparral Yamaha, and that's how it's going to work out.
I thought the same thing about myself playing for the Sturgeon Creek Blackhawks as a child playing hockey. I thought that was like the super junior team of the Chicago Blackhawks. That didn't end up being the case.
Yeah, we have this vision, when we're younger, like this is how it is, and it turns out not to be the case. But we tried our best. Like we discussed previously, didn't really have a context of like what amateur motocross was. Never heard of like Loretta Lynn's, Minios, none of that.
I'm gonna tell Dave you said that.
Yeah, it's just this is before social media too.
Oh, so, all right, yeah.
This is before most people had internet, so it's like okay, you had to know if you're gonna know,
right?
But we got introduced probably around maybe 2000, 2001. Ryan Hughes, he lived in the same town, some mutual friends, and my dad and him, they became friends, And he's like, oh, your son rides. Well, what's he doing? He's like, oh, he rides in the field at our house, type of a deal. We go to the desert sometimes.
Yeah. And, that's his current training program.
Yeah. And he's like, okay, that's not going to work. And so, we got a chance to work with him a little bit, and it's funny, I did a couple races and I had spent all this time on a motorcycle, probably 10 years of riding or so, and realized like, dude, I'm a complete beginner. I really have no context on how to ride a motorcycle properly, anything like that. And so, it was kind of a wake up call. Raced moto for a little bit, like finally got out of the beginner class, and, guys that, I came up with like in SoCal area, like Mike Lieb, Johnny Gildera, guys like that.
Michael Lieb.
Yeah.
You don't meet too many 5 and 6 year olds who end up with their bikes on the front cover of Motocross Action, but he was certainly one of them. And for those not listening, or for those who are not watching this on YouTube, to see the number ones and a couple of number twos, but mostly number ones behind Cameron, safe to say you figured it out over a few years.
Yeah, we did eventually. And, that came through off road. Eventually, Rhino kind of told us, he's like, hey, look, you probably have a better shot of a career in motocross. If you go give this off-road thing a chance, he's like, right now it's a lot of retired moto guys and a couple desert guys, but it's growing.
Yeah.
It's a series called the Work Series. You should check it out. And so we went and raced.
Because Rhino raced Works for a little while too.
He did. Yeah. He was
Honda.
Yeah, that's right.
I worked with him at Honda.
Yeah. He was gnarly off road too, man. It's, I mean, yeah, we all know, but, yeah, went out there and did the first race. I want to think it was in Taft, California, which is not, it was weird. It's like back then it was just like a long motocross track. It wasn't really desert. It wasn't really woods racing. It's like really like a Grand Prix style race, like the Elsinore Grand Prix. And had no idea how to go out, like what the plan was. My dad said, well, just, they're going to drop a flag. You just go pretend like you're on a really fast trail ride. And I signed up for the C class. I'm like, well, it's the first one. You know, I raced B in motocross. These guys might be like, you know, really fast. I have no idea. And raced it. How'd it go? I have no idea. I don't think I did that good. We went home and, I'm like, well, let's look at the results on Monday. And I ended up getting like third. I'm like, wow, that was not bad out of a field of like 40 guys, and went and raced the next one. Ended up winning that Lake Havasu, which was a rude awakening to like how gnarly off-road was. I had no idea. I'm like, oh, this is not like a trail ride. This is just ruin yourself, basically.
And your dirt bike. Off-road's good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think my dad was like, okay, we're going to need some help. We got to get some support here. This is going to get expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, kind of went through the ranks. Raced C class, won a championship, raced B class, won a championship, raced A class, won a championship, stayed in A class, turned pro 2009, raced a little bit, got a bad injury. I broke my tib fib and that took me out for like 12 months. I was on weight bearing for like 9 months. And so was kind of a kick in the pants. I had a couple championships, had a couple sponsors that were like, hey, you can kind of take your time and come back. But that was also at a time where Works had grown a bunch. Like we were seeing like 40 man pro gates. It was cool. You know, I was at the younger end and like my first couple races in that pro class, like I got my butt kicked. You know, we had Mike Brown started racing it. Ryan Hughes was still doing it. Caselli was coming on strong. And it was like, okay, these guys are gnarly. But yeah, struggled with that injury for a bit. Tried to come back. My dad's like, well, you want to try going to school for a bit? You can come back to racing. I'm like, okay. Didn't really want to, but I was like, I'll give it a go. And, you know, kind of got caught up in that. What turned into like, yeah, let's try out school for a little bit. Turned into like 8 years of formal education. Studied exercise science and physical therapy.
Dr. Brzezinski.
Not doctor. Yeah. No doctor.
On my name. Oh, I just went to school long enough to be one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have the loan bill to prove it. But yeah, you know, and when I came back in to racing, probably 2016 or 2017, like, you know, I'm going to race full time. I'm going to help some kids. I had been helping some younger riders. I saw the same thing that was kind of missing in my program. The Work Series and then Big Six, which became NGPC as it's known now. There was kind of two schools of riders. There was the retired motocross racers who had come in and really clean up. There was a couple guys had come through the ranks as kids. Like if you watch now, like you'll see like Dante, Oliveira, Mateo, like some of these guys who came up in off-road who are really starting to be like, wow, these are quite exceptional guys. But for the most part, it was still that same kind of mentality of like, hey, let's show up to the races. Let's get some seat time. Not a whole lot of work on technique. Definitely no training. Very little understanding of what you need to do nutritionally to fuel your body to go race for 2 hours. And we just saw some of those kind of same holes. So, you know, as I was still racing full time, started to coach more and more. And yeah, it's kind of the last couple of years kind of pulled away from me racing quite as much. You know, just kind of the nature of life getting a little bit older and, yeah, just seeing opportunity in these younger kids and wanting to pour more and more into them. But yeah, off-road is, kind of where our heart and soul is at. You know, we do a bit of motocross, but we love the Work Series. We love NGPC, Big Six, and yeah, that's our home.
That's incredible. And like the health of that series has grown exponentially and it's really become not only a series that, like you said, a lot of retired guys, I think of guys like Steve Hatch, Mike Kudrowski raced, works for a little while as well. Of course, Zach Bell, maybe the most famous of the racers who made the transition. And then somehow that little gremlin races a 450. But also that it's cultivated its own talent. Kids that literally probably like made their way around the track on PWs or 50s or 65s are now finding themselves in the pro class and able to make a living at it, and be competitive about it. Guys like Colt Necht, who raced Supercross for the longest time. Now, like, he's very active. And also Cole Martinez, basically a completely new lease on life by racing the Work Series.
Yeah, I think, you know, it opened up a lot of opportunity, you know, on both sides. You know, these guys that came up through it, like, I mean, shoot, we've seen some of these guys who have never really raced motocross formally go top 10 in a moto at a pro national now. And it's like, that's they're the real deal for sure. But then it's also been able to give, like you said, like with Cole, like a new lease on life with racing. It's like almost like starting a career over again. You know, and I think off-road affords people to do that. It's not that it's less intense by any means. I would say those guys would throw something at me if I said it was. But the travel schedule is a lot easier. I mean, we almost rarely do we have to race back-to-back weekends. You know, there's a lot more prep. It's definitely a fun family environment, you know, and we're all friends at the races. We know it can be hyper competitive. You know, I don't think, you know, Sexton and Jet are hanging out being buddies between motos, cracking jokes.
No.
Too much.
Yeah. Probably not too many words, actually.
Yeah. Very little, right?
Good race. So, fuck yeah. You.
Yeah. So, entertaining to watch for us, for sure.
Yeah. For sure. So, Cameron, what was the point after, you know, you went back to school, you did the 8 years, you know, you got back on a motorcycle. What was the point where you went, I can make a career at this, I can be a coach, I can help other people, and obviously your wife is involved as well. So how did that all come about? What was the point? You mentioned you own some teams. I've owned teams myself, so I know what you would go through with all that stuff, but What was the clinch when you said, you know what, I'm going to be a coach and I can make a living out of this and doing what I like?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I remember exactly where that light bulb kind of clicked on.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'll probably get the year wrong. I want to say 2016 or 2017. I was working outpatient physical therapy here in Temecula, Rancho PT. And I mean, if you ever been in there, the walls full of jerseys, you know, we got Reed, Langston, Matt Gerke, like all the guys, right? And it's a cool place to be. It was as close as I felt like I could get to the sport professionally at that age. And I had Blake Wharton come in. I think it was an ACL injury he did at Salt Lake when he was kind of trying to come back a little bit. And we knew each other, and you know, so we had him on a table. I'm stretching him. He's in tears, like ready to shout obscenities, but he's not because he's a nice guy. And he's like, man, he's like, I would love to be on the other side of the table with you right now. Basically, like, I'd love to switch positions because this hurts. And I actually am like, I would take you up on that. I'm like, I would rather be the one on the table getting to be close to the sport that I love than being in this position. And I realized that I had kind of left a lot on the table, and that I was really a lot more passionate about the sport than I was willing to admit. My wife, Carissa, she saw that, you know, and she was coaching powerlifters and bodybuilders and doing all this stuff. And she's like, hey, like, I work with athletes who sacrifice everything to go do the thing they love. She's like, can't promise how it'll all work out, but I think you should do it. And so got a bike, started racing, started training. I started collecting more riders to start coaching, and realized that, like, you know what? I'm at a stage, at an age where I don't think anyone's going to pay me a salary to go race, especially off road. It's just probably not in the cards at that level. I'm still going to go race professionally, but I need to be able to do this on my own dime. And so, you know, with some helpful sponsors, and starting a coaching business, you know, basically taking what we were doing part time and doing it full time, we're able to do that. And yeah, you know, it turned into a team. We had a couple riders who were just really exceptional, just really exceptional character, a lot of bike skill, not a lot of support. They were kind of late to the game, if you will. But I saw a lot of promise. Like we had
support is tough to come by regardless of skill level. Like I work with privateers. Heck, I work with full on, like, essentially factory riders, guys like Stu Baylor, that unbelievable on a dirt bike, skills that I'll never even like dream about having. Like if I'm going that fast on a dirt bike, I'll wake up seconds later, probably in the hospital. But the marketing side of things and the support side is something that is, it's just not taught. No one teaches you how to create a proposal. Or even like the days of a resume, like, yeah, you can send resumes, but it doesn't really hit the way it once did. Like, that's not really how a lot of companies even do it. Like, there's a lot of companies, they have sort of a funneled way of like, we're going to have you like send in your resume, and then like 99% of those people are going to get back their 25% off discount code. Hopefully through your local dealer, and that's it. There's no, like, the days of like getting an email back or getting a letter mail back from Cinesolo that you're hooked up for the whole year is gone. But continue.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, you know. And so, you know, we kind of saw that need there, and hopefully under that answers kind of the question on that was the turning point for sure.
Okay, awesome.
You know, and so it's like, okay, well, we're going to be all in, you know. And Chris and I, we had this because it was really hard at first, like really, really hard. You know, you go from a comfortable, you know, professional salary to trying to figure out. I knew nothing about business at all. Like, never thought I'd be an entrepreneur of any type. And so, yeah, we got our teeth kicked in the beginning, but we committed. We said, hey, we're willing to do whatever it takes for as long as it takes. You know, and it's always takes longer than you want, but it's not forever. And, you know, as we started, even when we were kind of struggling to get the business side going and to support racing and ourselves, these guys that we're working with would just have another breakthrough. And it's like, we have to keep showing up for them. It's like, we'd get a guy, get their first pro podium. And it's like, okay, we can't walk away from this. Like, you know, and cause a lot of them still weren't getting support. Like, you know, believe it or not, you can get podiums. You can even win championships and get overlooked, you know, to your point.
Sure. Absolutely.
And it's like, I've been it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys know the deal 100%. And so, you know, we've always had a heart for that. You know, and over time we're like, you know what? We need to better equip these riders to ask better questions, ask people properly, like to the point of how some of these sponsorship things are set up. It's like, yeah, 90%, get your 25% off. And, you know, there's a whole framework for it, and nothing wrong with that. Like, they're businesses, they got to do it. Some support's better than nothing, right? I think we all have to have a level of gratitude that we get any help at all and, you know, get to do that what we love. At the same time, you know, trying to mentor some of these racers, like, hey, if you don't ask, you can't expect to get anything. But you also have to understand that, like, hey, you are not God's gift to motorcycle racing just because you won this or that race. You have to have a level of gratitude, and there has to be, you have to demonstrate value. So like, if a company, you know, say we're like, we race off road. So like IMS makes a lot, most of the tanks that we run, right? Cherubis, you know, they make tanks too, but like most guys run IMS. Mm-hmm. If they're helping you understand, like, most of their market is more racers that they're already helping. So if you expect a lot, like, you better go above and beyond. Like, you show those pit stops, like, really market that product for them. And what's cool for a lot of these racers now with social media is, like, you can do that. Like, you don't have to take out a paid, you know, MXA to take out a magazine page, full color print to demonstrate something.
Yeah, you can do all the legwork yourself.
Just with an iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. It's sweat equity, but it's like, hey, what else are you doing? Right?
Right. So, obviously your wife is a coach as well. So you're both coaches. So who coaches who?
Yeah. I would say we definitely coach each other. Carissa, you know, she is more on the nutrition side these days. Okay. You know, she competed, you know, as a bodybuilder, like, you know, we've competed at the Arnold Classic and done all that stuff. She
no
was
big
basically,
deal.
Yeah, it was a big deal, but she ran herself through like every test she could do. It's really to see what she would be capable of. Mm-hmm. She got a couple of powerlifting medals behind us from the USPA, and
awesome.
She really kind of fell in love with the concept of most people are far more capable than they would ever imagine, that they can be stronger than they could ever imagine, that they can get better at something than they could ever conceive. And so she became a really strong coach for me, constantly convincing me that I could do stuff that I'm like, there's no way I can do that. She's like, you can easily do that. You just have to put in the reps.
Right.
And so, she is, my coach in that corner when it comes to the training. I do have other coaches, we actually partner with the guy, he's in Boise. He's actually moving down here, but Joe Degano, MX coach, and puts on riding clinics. We kind of stay away from the motocross technique stuff. I'm still a student of that myself, and so, we kind of all coach each other best we can. But yeah, Carissa is, I would definitely say, kind of the backbone hardliner. I'm sometimes a little bit of comedic relief to some of these racers, but she's the one that keeps them all in line.
I can tell from her Instagram that she loves to cook because she's always has a food segment, which I think is awesome.
You gotta fuel yourself. You gotta fuel. And I find eating better is a lot easier when it is good food or is tastes good. Like if you actually can make some decent meals, like I can make chicken, rice, and broccoli super bland, like anybody else. But if you can turn that in, like you can eat healthy and it tastes good, then you just like you might have hacked the matrix.
Oh, it's the truth. It's kind of funny. Chris actually does, she has a weight loss coaching service as well. That's kind of adjacent to what we do. And that's her whole thing. It's like, we all, how to, lose weight or get in better shape is not a mystery. Like we could all just go eat, bland chicken and rice and broccoli and we'd all drop a few pounds, but no one's going to do that for their entire life. So, she tries to expose that, like, hey, there's a way to do this and enjoy food. And then, when it comes to our motocross, athletes, it's like, good luck getting a 17-year-old to, meal prep everything out. It's like, okay, if you're going to eat Chipotle, we got to learn how to eat Chipotle so that it's actually serving you. And she's been really good with that.
That was from when we did Tyler from Guiltless. He said the same thing, right? That was what kind of sparked his journey. It was like, hey, these guys need to eat healthy. They're not going to do it. I'm going to prepare these meals for them. So that was, his whole idea as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we have quite a few guys on the Guiltless program. It's like, because to your point, like they're not going to meal prep on Sunday and do this whole, no. Good luck. They're washing bikes or chasing friends. And, it's just.
Well, yeah. And especially for young athletes, this is one thing that I've said to a lot of younger athletes that I've worked with, or has sort of been they've been under my tutelage on certain different things is when you're young, you're not always in complete control of what's in the fridge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're not like it, like if you can't even make chicken, rice and broccoli, if two of those three ingredients aren't even in the fridge, like if it's nothing but Pop-Tarts and like breakfast sausage in the fridge, that's not a recipe for, that's actually sounds delicious, but it's not, you're not going to get in fit that way.
Yeah, no, 100%, and we've had a couple guys, I got Zeller's jersey behind me, Cole Zeller, he's an off-road guy, up and comer, really fast. And that was his issue. He's like, yeah, dude, there's nothing good to eat in the house. And so we had a conversation. He is now the family chef. He does the grocery shopping. He does all of that. And they're like, okay, you can have whatever you want, but you're cooking. So it's been kind of funny to see that shift, but yeah, that's a huge limiting factor to a lot of these kids. And, I think sometimes it's parents just not quite knowing, or maybe they got, four kids, five kids, keeping all of them happy. Like that's quite an undertaking.
Certainly is. Let's talk about, like from a coaching standpoint, how rewarding it is to work with young athletes, athletes that are probably closer to your age. And that sort of like, I call it the aha moment. Like I used to compete in freestyle skiing. I went on and became a coach. afterwards, just so I could stay in the sport. And my favorite thing about it was being able to, instruct and help athletes or with their progression. You're explaining something. Sometimes they get it. Sometimes they don't, but then they put it into practice and they, what I call the aha moment, they look at you when it just clicks and like, they're like, just like you said it was, just like you said it would be. That's how it is. And, kind of take me through some of those success stories that you've been able to experience, because that's a really powerful moment, not only for the student, but also for the teacher.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that is probably the biggest reward in being a coach. I would 100% agree, you know, and I learned this from my coach. You know, he's like, look, you know, a lot of things, but you don't get it. Like, you know, but you don't get it. 'Cause if you got it, you do it and you don't. And so, you know, I remember actually we did a clinic with this guy, with Joe, and he's like, hey, who knows to ride on the balls of their feet? And, you know, I'm coaching this with him, and he's like, hey, we all know that. Cool. Everybody take off your boots. So he's got a line of 12 kids standing there, and all of their arches and heels are worn. No one's got foot peg marks on the ball. He's like, cool. All of you know this, but none of you do it. You don't get it. And so what?
You got to cut to the core to me like that.
That's right? that's a hard habit to break. Hey. Trust me.
God damn it.
I'm in that club too. It's all right.
I didn't know this was the roast of Brad Gebhardt this morning. My God.
Right. It's one of those things. And the realization was this is until someone discovers for themselves what it actually means, because we conceptualize like, yeah, I know that if my head's forward, my elbows are up, my knees are back, and I'm looking like Jet, somehow that's going to help me. But until I go discover for myself, like, oh my gosh, ruts are like no big deal now. You know, square edges are no big deal now. Like, it occurs to me personally, I have this discovery. And when you watch that click in a rider, you can tell. They come back in and they're not like, yeah, that's another drill. They come in and they're like, oh my gosh. And on our side of things, you know, when it comes to the training and when it comes to the nutrition, like our favorite one to do is getting a racer who's been training and they feel like they're plateaued. And Carissa looks at him like, you guys don't eat enough. Like, you know, you're racing off road. You're eating like 2000 calories a day. Like, we need to push it closer to 5,000, 6,000 calories. Like, you guys are burning way too much. And she'll prep them like 3 days out from the first race, and they'll go out there. They'll get off the bike, like ready to fight someone. They're like, I feel amazing. I could do this all day. I could do this forever. Never have to convince them to eat again. They got it. Like, they've experienced for themselves. There is no doubt in their mind, like, food matters. I knew it mattered, but I didn't get it. And so, yeah, that's.
I think that comes back to what you said earlier too, is not knowing what to eat.
Yeah.
As well, right? To fuel. You know, I go through the same thing with bicycle racing, you know, how to fuel for 2, 3, 4 hour, because your body wants different things at different times. So there's a lot going on there, and it's all about calories. It's calories the whole way.
100%. You know, and you know, to your point, right? Like, there's different ways to fuel for different events. You know, and so, you know, what's working for, you know, to go race a night show, it's not completely dissimilar, but it's not the right approach to go race 2 hours in the desert in the heat. There's considerations, and the truth of the matter is most people don't know what they don't know. And so until they're exposed to it, until they discover it, it's like, I think this is all I'm capable of. Yeah. Or you wrongly identify a problem. You think, I just need to be fitter. When in reality, you just need better hydration and better fuel. You need more calories.
Right. Let's talk about that a little bit, to where, you know, you do have a 2 or 3 hour race. Let's talk about a guy that's probably listening to this, thinking he might do an MPGC series. He's not going to do a race. He doesn't know. When you look at that, and it's 2 to 3 hours, depending on where you're at, the terrain, whether it's Havasu, wherever you want to go, you know, different to bicycle racing, where I can carry, I can consume when I'm pedaling, I'm fine. You go on to that race, I mean, you can carry a camelback, whether you have water in it, a mixture of Gatorade or whatever your concoction may be. But, you know, like you said, you're prepping 2 to 3 days before for those calories and the fluid. You don't want to overhydrate, because that's a problem. You know, and you're trying to conserve, what's a 3 hour race, probably 3,000 calories maybe in that vicinity. And you've got to try and prep, and some guy's going to show up and go, I'm going to do this race today. You know, there's a lot going on there. So how do you fuel for those guys? To they suck a ton of gels, or are they just all protein? Are they all carbs the night before? What's your process on that?
Yeah. So one thing that we have discovered is that it's pretty rider dependent. Mm-hmm. So like for example, you know, recently we've been working with Josh Moseman, and before the Nationals, he did an NGPC race. And so I found out that his diet has been pretty much kind of a keto carnivore style diet for like last year. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so probably one of the worst things we could do is try to carb load him. His body's not going to respond well. It's very accustomed to metabolizing fats as energy. So mm-hmm. for him, it was just really upping calories a couple of days before. Cause what he was doing, if your weight is stable, you're burning calories and you're replacing them. Maybe you can rely on hunger enough to kind of help you gauge that. It's like, okay, you are now going to go do something where you are going to burn, you know, 3, 4, maybe even 5 times as many calories in that 24-hour period than you would on a normal day. Mm-hmm. If you just go do that unprepared, you're going to hit the wall really hard. And that had been his previous experience. And so, you know, what we did, you know, 3 days ahead of time, just start upping calories by 30%, not going crazy. And so for that approach, that was fine. Now, we've had other riders who are just the way they ride the motorcycle, very, and I'm not going to be the one to say like this is proper or improper. They're very aggressive on the bike. They move around, right? They're scrubbing everything.
Very efficient.
Yeah. And so, you know, we look at that and it's like, okay, you need so much explosiveness to do this. You're not like fats don't lend itself super well if you haven't been on that kind of diet. If you're a carb-based guy, like we just need more of what your body's prepared to consume. And so the challenge with that is, to your point about, you know, a longer race, is we can't carb load for a 2-hour race and not have something intra-workout, intra-race. Like, there's no way. Right. And so like, yeah, we do some light carb loading. I don't like to do it too much. It can kind of, what they'll find if they've never done it before is they gain a bunch of weight, good energy, but it's kind of like they feel heavy and sluggish. So it kind of depends on the rider, but really we're like, yeah, a 30% increase in calories, kind of carb up, you know, heavily the night before, morning before, not crazy, not like if you were to do like a marathon maybe or something, you know, like really crazy endurance event. But yeah, we if they like gels, we go for gels. I prefer stuff that's a little bit easier to get down, especially when we're racing in the heat. Like the last thing you want when it's 100 degrees in the desert is something gooey and sticky in your mouth. So, you know, some sort of like dextrose or some sort of, you know, carb that's easily soluble in water. And we throw it in a straw and a water bottle and they come through the pit for fuel, throw it in there, and we try to get as much as they can stomach without upsetting digestion.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys who and ladies that race that they really don't know how to approach nutrition on race day, or they try to eat completely different on race day than they do on any other day. And I think that can lead to an upset stomach or just sort of just completely kind of throwing your whole program out the loop, because your body's not used to that. It's not sort of conditioned to use that as fuel or operate at that level. How do kids approach that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the younger they are, it can kind of be a little bit challenging, but you know, by the time they're on a full-size motocross bike, I look at it like, if we can treat, you know, the couple days before, just eat like it's Thanksgiving, that's typically sufficient. What I find with the younger guys, especially, because, and I don't know if this is, if there's science behind this, I think it's more situational. Like as riders get more mature, they try to conserve energy naturally. But like every 17-year-old, like we said, they're throwing style off everything, even in an off-road race versus, you know, Cole Martinez, you know, he's, you know, same age as me. He's very efficient. He's not doing extra stuff because he wants to win.
But not that he couldn't. Cole's a style master. That guy can chug it.
Yeah. Not that he couldn't by any means, but yeah, it's like you learn. But, you know, so something I look at for them, for the younger kids, is like, yeah, we need to have them eat up, okay? More calories, even if it's not the greatest, if it's all available, I would rather have them fueled on stuff that's not the greatest rather than underfueled, avoiding junk food. Like,
correct.
Pop-Tart is better than no food at all. And it's like, it's not ideal, but sometimes you have to start, you have to walk before you can run. And then the other thing that I think that I've seen is kind of a big hole is most people are accepting that, like, hey, you need to replace fluids, you need electrolytes. Like I said, you don't want to overhydrate, right? But understanding that the minerals, right, they're created for different things. So it's not always enough. If you're having a problem, you need to understand, like, if you're feeling weak in the heat, that's a different problem than muscle cramping. It's like, you know, calcium, for example, right? That's helping the muscle contract. So if you're feeling weakness, it might be a calcium deficiency versus if like that cramping is really, really bad, you probably have a magnesium deficiency. And so not, you know, just a shotgun approach to that is not always sufficient. So really asking these younger riders, like, well, what are you feeling? Like, what are you experiencing out there? Like, how do you feel in the beginning of the race? When you come to pit, how are you feeling now? And it's like getting them to say more than I feel pretty tired or I feel pretty good, like getting them to use more descriptive words so we can identify what's missing. That's kind of the approach.
I find with some of the guys I talk to, you know, you trying to fuel for the day, like I have a, you know, I like to try and get between 700 to 1,000 calories in the morning before either a bicycle race or a motorcycle race. So you've got 2 or 3 hours of stored food and, you know, you get to the bathroom, you do that sort of stuff. And it's amazing that some of the people I talk to, even in bicycle racing, that don't eat breakfast. It's either they don't like breakfast or they're nervous.
Yeah.
And their body shuts down and they're like, oh, I don't feel like eating. I've got nerves or, you know, everything else. And it's like, you have to get past that. It is uncomfortable eating 1,000 calories at 5 in the morning, but you have to train yourself to do that.
Yeah. 100%, you know, your body. And look, I'm still this way. I still get nervous on race day. Like, I think we all do. Like, I think it's foolish to think that ever goes away, even at the top level. Like, you want to win. There's a lot of pressure there. So, you know, you start that fight or flight response, you know, that parasympathetic nervous system takes over. It's going to shut down that rest and digest. Like, food is the last thing you think you need.
Yep.
But you do kind of have to, like, okay, I know that I feel this way. I have to think logically to say, my body can't run on empty. My bike can't run without fuel. So neither can I. So I need to get it in. And so, like, you know, to your point, like, yeah, you have to have breakfast. If you're skipping breakfast on a race day, like, that's, you're setting yourself up for failure. And I'll tell guys, like, eat something, get down whatever you can get down. Like, you may not have the appetite for a breakfast burrito and sausage and this heavy meal. It's like, okay, have some yogurt, something that's easy to get down. Yeah, because it's a non-negotiable, and that's all of our athletes. I'm like, hey, like, we're not meal skippers here. It's not going to work.
Right.
No, you're setting yourself up for failure if you're not going to be fueled properly. From a nutrition standpoint, what would you say is the biggest mistake that a lot of racers make, both young and old?
Yeah, I would say this. One, skipping breakfast, like we just discussed, like that's a major thing. But then also they don't always feel the best following a moto or following practice. And so they fail to refuel. And so what they're not realizing is they're creating a calorie deficit that's lasting longer than just that day. So like for a while, like we had a lot of our athletes like wearing like a Whoop band or something like that, tracking calorie burn. And we had one athlete we found out, it's like on race day, he burns 7,500 calories.
Jesus. Like,
yeah. Oof. Yeah. Like, I mean, he was a gnarly athlete.
How do you
like,
not feel depleted?
Right. It was no joke. But what we were noticing is he was, at least when we were on season training, he was not responding to the resistance training we were doing favorably at all. We're like, well, something's going on here and this shouldn't be too much. Like, it was well within recoverable volume, but he wasn't recovering. and weight wasn't necessarily dropping, but like obviously cortisol is elevated. So like he would kind of go from this like preseason lean, ready to fight guy to this kind of flabby mess, you know, just, you know, to put it directly. And it's like, yeah, we're not refueling. We had no idea what he was burning until we measured it. And it's like, okay, that needs to be replaced. So yeah, it was eat breakfast, right? Fuel up for it. But like, you need to replace those calories. So that I can say with those are the two biggest things, like be prepared, but like you can't just go back to eating normally post-race. Like you need to restore what you burned. Otherwise you're creating a deficit that's going to last into the week. It's going to affect your training. And if your race, like, I mean, if you're a pro and if you're racing outdoors and you're doing that, like you're in for a bad time. You're going to get midway to the, you know, through the season, you're going to bonk because like you're just not recovering.
Yeah. Your body's going to start to eat itself because it wants the nutrients that you're not giving. You get that pungent pea smell and it's eating protein and muscle. And it's like, yeah, that's, you know, you don't want to be in that situation at all.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens. We've all seen it. Maybe we've experienced it, but yeah, it's, mm-hmm. it's frustrating because it's needless.
Fair enough. So before we, like just throw down the socials and find out where people can follow and get in touch with you, give me like a 10,000 foot view of what you believe would be a great way for, someone to prep week of their, a big race coming up and also the week after or the days after so that they can prepare themselves to be probably back on the track in a couple weeks time.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We can do this in the context of someone who's maybe not doing a whole lot. To get ready for a race, it's best not to try to get fit in a hurry. I tell people that less is more. A lot of people are like, okay, I'm doing this race in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Okay, well, we're definitely not training 4 days a week in the gym. You know, we can introduce a little bit of light resistance training, but the fastest way to get some gains, get your heart rate elevated, do some low load cardio, working, you know, do ladders in zone two, acclimate your body some intensity. You can do some intervals, right, outside of that. Okay. I like separating those sessions. And then stretch, be mobile. That's what we would do like on the training side. Anything else needs to be done kind of away from racing, or you're going to have a decrease in performances, which is why most people, they train like, oh, that didn't really work for me. I actually felt worse. So they stop. So that's what I would say there. If we're dealing, you know, a short window of time nutritionally, I would encourage people not to change their diet up a whole bunch. It's like, okay, whatever you're eating, you know, 3 days before, just increase it by 30%. So easiest way to do that, not think about it. If you're eating three meals a day, just have a fourth meal that's about the same size. That's going to put you close enough. Mm-hmm. If you do that, you'll be golden. And then on race day, eat breakfast, have something right before you go up, whether it's a gel, whether it's, you know, a carb solution, whatever you need to do, and then replace the calories you burn. Like eat like it's Thanksgiving after. If you do that, it's going to be pretty hard to mess that up. And that's usually where we start. More than that is, it gets a bit convoluted. Mm-hmm.
And then that, with that being said, how can people find out more information on the Hillbilly Speed Factory? How do they get in touch with you and what does working with you look like?
Yeah. So, you know, they can find us on Instagram. It's pretty easy. Follow me, Hillbilly Speed Factory or Gainslinger Human Performance, or follow Carissa at Gainslinger. She's the original Gainslinger. Just DM us. We got public profiles. You can talk to us there or you can go to our website, gainslinger.com. You can submit an inquiry if you have questions. We're happy to answer that. You know, working with us can look like a number of things, to be honest. I have a heart for that racer who doesn't know what they don't know. So we like to give people as much context. We have a ton of free resources to get people started. You know, we have a 6-week boot camp that we don't charge for. If you wanted to know everything to kind of do, you know, to expedite the process to get fit and fueled in a hurry, we can do that, you know, and then, you know, coaching is kind of a little bit more intimate setting. So, you know, that always a little bit kind of requires an interview and a conversation. But, you know, we're happy to help anyone who wants to kind of just step up their game a little bit, whether, you know, you're trying to make a career of this or, you know, maybe a vet rider who just wants to enjoy it a little bit more and have a little bit less pain and fatigue on Monday.
Yeah.
Where did the name Gainslinger come from?
Yeah, so
you've seen the peaks on his wife's biceps?
Yeah, she had a client when she was powerlifting who came in. He owned a construction company, and he was like, he had recently just bought a Harley Davidson. He's like, I need to look the part. He's like, I feel like I'm not this guy. I want to look this way. And she's like, well, I'll put you on my program. And basically ran him through it. You know, he's, you know, I'm sure he's doing some sort of TRT or maybe some extra stuff. I don't know. But anyways, put on a lot of gains in a short amount of time. And people would ask him what's going on. Like, oh, I'm working over here. Chris is just slinging gains at me left and right. And no. She became the gain slinger.
There you go.
And awesome. You know, so that kind of,
I figured it had to be something like that along the lines.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for those listening, if you're a weekend warrior who is trying to get more enjoyment out of riding your motorcycle, you want to feel safer on the motorcycle through fitness, or you don't even know where to start on nutrition, this podcast was for you. If you're a vet rider who's been like gone through a ton of different workouts, different programs, different this, different that, this podcast was for you. If you're a young racer that doesn't know even know where to start, you're 14, 15 years old, you've never stepped foot in the gym, you're having Pop-Tarts first thing in the morning, this podcast was for you. And I truly believe that Hillbilly Speed Factory is somewhere where a lot of kids or full-grown adults can sort of get their feet wet within the fitness and nutrition side of things and really make those gains in order to, like, you don't have to be like well on your way to Works Series Championships or they have that new Grassroots Off-Road Series over in Utah. Like, you don't have to be in that series and winning championships already to benefit from this. You can start from ground one. And I'd call up Cameron and learn something, because knowledge is power, baby. It's what it's all about.
Yeah,
indeed. It at least teach you how to grow a great mustache.
Yeah, we try, right?
That's it.
Yeah, no, we're always happy to help. You know, we're here for that rider, you know, at any level. So, you know, hit us up on Instagram, hit us up on the website. I promise you, we have something for you to get you started.
Very cool. Very cool. Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Cameron, thank you for coming on the show, giving us some time. I think you're going to have to be a repeat offender, because this conversation was way too much fun. I gained something from it. I know, Hoppo says so as well. But this has been awesome. Thank you so much for the time.
Awesome. Appreciate you both. Right.
Thank you. Excellent. Sir. Have a great day.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be in Hurricane Mills, Tennessee? Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wind spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Times this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, and rowdy fans play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.
It's time to get
out. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the field. If you can put it all together three times, this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2.